have to throw your Bible away if you're a science major. Now, some of you guys, you're not science majors, so it doesn't matter to you, but we all know science majors. We all know people that are that have questions or struggling with the questions that come up as science majors or regarding science. So the next question could be, does science disprove God? And that's a really valid question our friends have and we have. And here's the claim. The Bible and science both help us to search out and know God. I know it could be hard to believe, some of us and some of our friends. How can the Bible and science help us to search out and know God? Let's find out. Now, many people, they choose not to consider what the Bible says because they can't get past the first few chapters. Some people might say, it's got to be a fairy tale. It has to be a fairy tale if the world was created in 6 days. What about where it says we're created in God's image? What about what Darwin says? How can we be created in God's image, but yet I'm taught that Darwin and his teachings and other things that have launched out of that are accurate? What about the talking snake in the book of Genesis? Come on, that is pretty hard to believe. And so some people just write off, I can't believe in the Bible. The first book of the Bible shares a lot of things that just don't jive with what I see as fact. It's an honest statement, honest thought. So first, I would say let's start by understanding Genesis. To understand Genesis, the first book of the Bible, is a lot in understanding how does the Bible help us to search out and know God. So there's a lot of confusion in this first. Hi, Grace. There's a lot of confusion in this first book. If you think about it, knowing this first chapter, you've got the earth created in 6 days. Some people would say in the first chapter that a day could mean an age or a long time. Some would say when it says the earth was created in a day, it could be 1,000 years. There's a lot of confusion here. And when we have this other belief that even the first book in, or the first chapter in Genesis could be symbolic or poetic. Whenever you read the Bible though, guys, whichever part, it's good to read it as the original author intended it to be understood for the original audience. Then, from that, you can draw application to life. So you want to take what the original author actually wrote here and say, now why did he write it for the people he wrote it to? And then you take that and apply it to life. By the way, guys, you come in, grab all the drinks you want, grab some food, anything. Any of you guys too, don't hesitate. So, Genesis, here's the thing about Genesis, the first book of the Bible. It wasn't written so that we could have scientific understanding of creation. And I know a lot of people really wanted to make it into that, but I don't believe that the original author wanted it to be something that taught us about science. I think the original author, who was Moses, wrote the first 5 books of the Bible. He didn't write them for science. He wrote them to teach people about who God is and what he's doing. And so when we come from that perspective, we see Genesis kind of how it was made to be understood. And so the Jewish tradition and record shows that's how Moses wrote this, and that's why he wanted it in there. It was never supposed to be a science book. And this book here was written by 40 different authors, the whole Bible, over 1,500 years, and there's one main theme. That main theme is rescue. Another more accurate term for rescue could be redemption. I don't use that word too much, but redemption has in the meaning something about being purchased or bought with a price, or rescued with a price might be more accurate. So if this book is about redemption or rescue with a price, we see this theme really continued out as you get into the New Testament, where it talks about the life and death of Jesus. And then you're starting to put the connection together how this God who is a rescuer sends Jesus, and it's a story of God. The God himself who we saw a few weeks ago was Jesus in John chapter 1. He's rescuer, he's the redeemer, he's the savior, and he's the creator, which Genesis 1 talks about. And so knowing that storyline of the Bible and knowing that Genesis wasn't written so that we could have a scientific understanding of creation, we could kind of move on. This first chapter of Genesis is written entirely different than the rest of the book of Genesis. There's one thing, some people would say it's poetic, and it might very well be the first chapter. But there's one thing that, as followers of Jesus, or anybody who's considering Jesus, you have to know, and you just have to rest in it. It has to be solid, though, I think, or this whole book doesn't make sense, is that in the beginning, God created. Genesis 1:1, the first chapter, the first verse of the first chapter, the first book of the Bible starts out, in the beginning, God created. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and then it launches into this creation story. And so the whole entire Bible rests on that claim. That is not poetic. That is not there to... That's not a science quote. That is everything that the Bible rests on. God created. And we saw a few weeks back that in the beginning, God created, and Jesus was that God. Jesus was with God, but was before time began, and he came into this earth to rescue it. So now we saw Genesis. So when you read the six days, and you're like, is that six literal days? I'm gonna leave it open right now. Just say it may be poetic, okay? But let's just think about one thing, and I'm gonna move on regarding that. But God can do anything if he's God. If in the beginning God created, he could do it in six literal days. I know science to some people might show differently. But let's look at science and God. So first we looked at Genesis. Now we have to see Genesis and how science kind of connects with that. But also now science and God, how God designed everything. So the definition of who God is, right, is really God is. He existed before everything was. He's the creator who made us. We don't evaluate him. He made everything that's non-God. See, God created everything that is non-God because he always was and created everything, right? Just our definition of God, logically. Everything's dependent on him because he's the greatest of all things. Okay, so I'm coming with that assumption. But if that claim is true, then God would make us as humans, and he didn't have to use apes, right? I've heard people say that, like, we come from apes, but also some people would say, well, maybe evolution took place from the apes on, something like that. But if God is God and created all things, he could do anything, and he didn't have to use apes. Our greatest ancestor doesn't have to be the monkey. It's true, if God created everything. A snake could talk. Could be possible, right? If this claim is true, the Bible we hold in our hands, it could be exactly what God wanted it to be. So a lot of people would say, and we've talked about this, you know, practically why this book is accurate. There's so many manuscripts that it's not like we have an issue of there's not enough evidence that it's accurate. It's that we have too many manuscripts. But if God is God, he could have this book in our hands exactly the way he wants it. It's a good thought. If this claim is true that God created everything, then giant bodies of water could be parted, like we hear in the story of the Exodus or of how God freed the slaves from Egypt. You could have a whale that could swallow a person and that person could still remain alive. If God is God, he created everything, right? It's feasible. People could be raised from the dead, and there can even be an afterlife if in the beginning God created. But here's where the issue comes in. You've got this thing called naturalism. Another one would be materialism. Materialism or naturalism, that belief is that only the things that we can test are what we hold as true. Scientism is another loose word for it. So only things that could be fit in a test tube, or only things that we could quantify, are right here. And that's all that we know, and that's all we're going to believe. And that is highly opposed to theism. And theism is the belief that there is a God and he's working. Now, theism goes down the line and starts understanding, you get into different religions, but theism says there is a God and he's working in some way. So you have naturalism and theism, and they're so opposed they can't go together because naturalism doesn't allow for something you can't test for, which is God. So many scientists, they're atheists, and they're naturalists. They say there's no supernatural. And just by definition, science can't prove the miraculous. That doesn't mean that the miraculous or supernatural doesn't exist. I'm just trying to kind of bring that other side. This is that claim from a Christian worldview, but also a theist worldview. Like, just because we can't test it doesn't mean that it's not real, that it's not something that's taking place. So, if the first verse of the Bible is true, then science is actually describing the God who designed things to work. Then science is actually describing not only the God who designed things to work, but how he did it. So, when we see God created, in the beginning God created, science shows not only the footprint or the hand stamp of God in our DNA and the cycle of the universe, but it's showing how we did it. The more we understand science, the more we see God. That's my claim, at least. So, you know, do you or your friends believe in the evolutionary theory? First, there's many different types of evolutionary theories, so we have to be careful there. But as long as you don't budge on the fact, I'm going to throw this out. If you don't budge on the fact that God created everything, if you don't budge on that, you can follow Jesus. Okay? Now, Richard Dawkins, he's a new atheist, considered a new atheist. You know, one of these newer popular guys. He's got books. He's on YouTube. He's everywhere. This is what he says. Who's heard of Richard Dawkins? Okay. If you haven't, just every book on atheism is written by him, it seems like. Okay. Or that new movie. We've got Anthony Hawkins, and he's like, you know, theory of everything, right? Stephen Hawkins. Anthony Hawkins. Stephen Hawkins, the theory of everything. Okay, those are the two big guys right now. Okay, here's what Rich says. He begins The Blind Watchmaker. So this is his book, and he has this statement. Biology is the study of extremely complex things that look as if they were designed by a creator for a purpose. I've actually heard him say this too, but it's in his book. And this is in context, as far as I can tell, because I have heard him say this. So he gets it right? He says, biology is the study of extremely complex things that look as if they're designed by a creator for a purpose. But then he goes on, and he says, it is the job of the biologist to show that this is not so. It's the job of the biologist to show this isn't so, that it's an illusion, and that they are really produced by the mindless, purposeless process of the Darwinian evolution. So hear that, this mindless, purposeless process. That's really what it is, according to Dawkins. And it's the opposite of what the Bible proposes. The Bible says, in the beginning God created, and we could see order. We could see God's hand behind everything. Now, why would it ever be a goal of science to show there's no designer? That sounds like Dawkins, what he's saying. He's saying that there's an illusion going on. Biology seems to show that we were designed by a creator for a purpose, but that's not true. And it looks like Dawkins has an agenda. I mean, it takes more faith almost to say, wow, that's an illusion, even though it looks like there's a designer. It's all an illusion. But just because science can't explain the beginning doesn't mean we throw away the Bible's explanation for the beginning. See, Dawkins, other atheists, they can't explain the beginning. I have, as a Christian, I have an answer for the beginning. I can't put it in a test tube. That doesn't mean you throw it away. Just throwing that out there. And I would suggest we call our friends to not throw it away. Just consider these claims. A science book and the Bible, they can go hand in hand. They don't have to oppose each other. The more we know, the more we see design. And this is why theology at odds with science and science at odds with theology, it doesn't have to be at odds. They can go hand in hand. Science can reveal God. And the more we see and know science, it's showing who God is and his design. So I would suggest asking your science teacher in class or anything, why should it be this way? Why is the Bible being attacked in science class? It actually doesn't make sense to me if it could go hand in hand. So if we're honest, and Dawkins agrees here, there's a bold appearance of a designer. We can't get away from that. Dawkins would say so. Christians would say so. Buddhists would say so. Agnostics would say so. Anyone would say so. There's a bold appearance of a designer in the universe, right? quick example is if I take a maple tree leaf, kind of distinct, you know, you've got your three leaves, they all point one direction, and I lay them out on the ground, and I've got three maple tree leaves just lined up like this, all pointing the same direction on the ground outside. Say there's no wind that day. Somebody's walking by, and they see three leaves just hanging out on the ground. They're going to be like, man. I mean, they might not say it because it's not really that interesting, but they're going to be like, who lined those up? You're never going to say, oh, by chance, they just landed in that exact order. That's a very simple example of the order that we see. And when we look at it and we see it, we're saying, who did that? You're automatically going to think someone put them in that position, and yet we hear over billions of years, anything is possible argument. It's a common argument, right, for evolution and how things happened over billions of years, we came to exist. But I see design, and it's hard to get around it. Yet to get the world as we know it in over any amount of years, whatever it is, billions and trillions, it's actually mathematically improbable. Fact. Can't get around it. It's mathematically improbable. And yet, still, people are saying that it can't happen. Over billions of years, life can exist. It's a fact. And we see design everywhere, from the structure of the universe to the complexity of DNA. Here's what Isaac Newton says. He would agree. He would say, this most beautiful system of sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being. And really, deep down inside, we know this. Many of us know this. Many of our friends are just agnostic just for the simple fact that they see creation, and they're like, there has to be a God. I just can't figure out who he is. And that's an honest, honest statement. Now, looking next, we see not only God kind of behind the design, but he's behind science itself. In the beginning, God created all things. Then what scientists quantify, study, and put into test tubes, it could be just as much a part of the designer's creation as the things science can't explain. Okay, so God can be just right there. You can have everything in test tubes, can be part of God's design, but also the things science can't explain can be of God. Let me explain. So you have gravity. Take gravity, for example. We can only explain the effect. We talked about this the other day with a buddy. We have no clue of the cause of gravity. Now, we understand gravity on the Earth, but we don't understand gravity as the law as it exists in the universe and beyond. Yet, it's been even suggested that gravity created everything instead of God creating. It's actually referenced to the theory of everything by Stephen Hawking. He initially wrote, actually, hold on. Here's Stephen Hawking right here. Okay, so God did not create the universe in the Big Bang. That was an inevitable consequence of the laws of physics. That's what Stephen Hawking would show. He's this theoretical physicist, and he argues in this book that God did not create the universe in the Big Bang. In The Grand Design, he co-authored with physicist Leonard Mittenau, and he says a new series of theories he has here that made a creator of the universe redundant, according to the Times newspaper. Okay, now here's him quoting. So in the movie, The Theory of Everything, you're going to see Stephen Hawking. First, he has this equation that shows that God existed, that there was a beginning, which means someone created the beginning. But then later in his life in the movie, great movie, by the way, he's like, I'm setting out to disprove that. I'm almost there. And that's where you get the title, The Theory of Everything. The theory of everything came to be. Initially, he was an agnostic. Now he's an atheist. And he's trying to prove it with an equation. But here's what he says. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there's something rather than nothing. Spontaneous creation. That's why the universe exists. That's why we exist. He goes on. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going. So he's saying, in the beginning, he says, the law of gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. So he's saying, basically, the universe was created from gravity. Simple to him. And he's setting out to prove that in his equation. But you have this thought, why can't God just be the cause of gravity? Why can't God be the designer of gravity and even the sustainer of gravity as we know it? When we read the Bible, we even hear that, like, Jesus sustains all things. All things are held up by and through him. It's crazy, like, and we're like, what does that mean? And there's all this stuff. But really, he should not only be a God of the gaps. The Bible would say that he is the God of all. Not only the things we can't explain, but also the things we can't explain. God of all. So a friend of mine says he wants to remain humble, and science to him is humble. He says, science says we can't explain everything, but what we can explain is sure. And he feels like believing in a creator who created everything, it's too easy. There isn't proof, and it's just too easy to say, well, God did it, right? I mean, honestly, it is easy kind of to say that. But I just tell them, look at the little bits that science can explain, and then humbly admit there has to be a creator. Let's just take it reverse. Let's look at the little bit that you can quantify and be like, who did that? Because we see designer all through it. And Hawking would just be the reverse. He sees what he can't fully understand, and he's like, nah, that wasn't God. It seems to be harder, in my opinion, to go the other route. So this isn't science versus religion or Christianity. If the first verse of the Bible is true, then God created science. It's awesome. Science says, look at the order, look at the design, look at the method, look at what we see. That's what science says. And a designer is supported. Here's what Christianity or the Bible says. Look at the historical account of God, primarily through the Bible. Look at the historical account of God, and then we look at that in the Bible, and we see the story of God written by people who knew God. And so you have this where the Bible and science, they help us to search out and know God. We see the story of God, and then in science we see the intricacies of God, the order of God, the magnificence of God. The more we know about the universe, we're like, God is big. The more we know about the intricacy of a cell, we're like, God is even working in the intricacies of life. And so when you feel small because God is big, that's a really good feeling. We see that in the Bible, but also when you feel like God cares because he's working in the intricacies of life, we see that in the Bible as well. So he's a God, he's a big God, cares about really small people. And we see that through science, and we see it in the Bible. So just because we can't explain God doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Just because we can't grasp everything doesn't mean we can't know him. There could very well be a supernatural world. There could be. A designer, and the universe is crying out that there is. I would believe it's the God of the Bible. And Romans 1 says this, for what can be known about God, it's plain to us. It's plain to them, it says, because God has shown it to us. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made. And so we're without excuse. And if we're honest, we look at creation and we're like, there's a God. But if we were dialoguing right now, you would be like, okay then, how do I know it's the God of the Bible? I think that's an honest path of progression. Let's just say God made the world in 6 days. I'm focusing on God himself first, but I want to just say God of the Bible has lots of evidence behind why this Bible is accurate. But let's say the God of the Bible made the world in 6 days. He could, right? But some would say the earth looks really old. Okay, let's go with that. But I also think that man could be young. We read the Bible, man could be not as old as science books make it out to be. Another one could be like, I don't know how long days were back then. There's so much about the beginning of time or the beginning of the history of the earth that I just honestly don't understand it. I don't get it. There's stories in the Bible where God stopped time for a day. There's stories of how water came up from the ground and a flood came. I can't imagine that. There's stories of people that are living 800, 900 years. This is a world, you guys ever heard of Pangaea, where all the continents were together? For us people as scientists to be like, we get it? I feel like that's the opposite of humble. To say that we know what the world was like near the beginning of creation? Wow. So we have to be careful. And I would say that it might not be an exact timeline and scientific description of creation as we fully can understand it when we read Genesis. Just give it a little license, but we have to understand that God created everything. So in the beginning, when God created everything, did he say, poof, there's a sprout? No. You know, and then that tree grew, and it grew for millions of years. Scientists are testing those trees. They're testing them, and they're like, well, this tree is billions of years old. But how do we know God didn't make it a billion years old when he said, poof, there's a tree? Big old tree. You know, like, we want to say that we understand radiometric dating. Our teachers want to say that. I'm just trying to throw out, hey, God could have made that thing old when he made it. And now the whole world is launched from a certain perceived time period. But when we use radiometric dating, or scientists, they're saying the rocks are this age, but they're going off an assumption of the initial age of the rock. That makes sense what I'm saying? So we just need to tell people that, or help them understand, or just see, hey, a lot of things that people are saying are fact are really theories or based off of assumptions. I don't have time to go into that. Answersingenesis.com is a good one to just kind of look at. Consider, like, hey, how can all those animals fit on an ark? You know, like, I have guys that are like, I can never believe a crazy story like that because you could never fit millions of animals on the ark. I'm just saying there's answers to that stuff. Like, well, you don't need millions of animals. You only need the two of every main species. So, like, you don't need all the dogs. You just bring two dogs, you know, like two wolves, and all the dogs came from that. So you just go down the list, and they could fit on an ark. People have done the math. They try to do it, at least. There's a lot of answers. There are a lot of things that we can throw out there. Even Neanderthals, right? Did we come from Neanderthals? Did we grow from, like, did we evolve from them? Because we have Neanderthals in the museums. Well, here's some thoughts. Just to throw out some things so you guys will look more into these thoughts. But who says they didn't have genetic mutations or sort of disorder to make them Neanderthals? Maybe they were humans the whole time. So humans existed. It's fine. How do we know for sure we come from them? Couldn't they have been just another species? Maybe they weren't humans. All we have is their remains. Some people would say, well, we've seen their progression as they've grown and things like that. But we don't know all the answers. Even the dating assumptions are wrong. So don't let these things kind of, my suggestion is to think outside the box. The world, however long ago, was very different. There's common knowledge of a worldwide flood. What would that do to the earth? Just think about it. I don't know what it would do. I know it would create a lot of fossils. It would change a lot of continental structures. It would also probably radically alter how the whole earth kind of worked if there was a worldwide flood. So we want to be careful, and many religions agree to that there was a flood across the globe. And so to say, hey, the way we can test the world now doesn't jive with the way the book of Genesis kind of speaks about in the beginning. It's a little scary to say we know. So I'm just saying, consider. Maybe in the beginning God did create it. Maybe the things we don't understand in the book of Genesis is because it's a really long time ago and a lot of things changed. We have so little information about how it was. So I'm just saying, your science book or professor hasn't told you a good bit of the possibilities. There's so many other things to think about. Even dinosaurs. You want to talk about that for a minute? We'll talk about that another time. But they can literally exist in a way, like, okay, where is it in the Bible? Some people would say, well, we see it in the Bible. But here's the thing. You can have dinosaurs on the ark. All you need is two. How come we didn't find... These are just things that people have asked me around here. How come we don't find dinosaurs with humans in the fossil record? What human would want to be with dinosaurs? Just saying, like, what humans are going to be next to dinosaurs in the fossil record? You're working on assumptions of the time period of the earth. It's crazy. We think it always has to be this way. By the way, how many humans were on the face of the earth back then? Not a lot, because according to Genesis, it's 1500 years or 2000 years prior to that, you know, the age of the earth. We do the genealogies, things like that. If you take that, how many people were on the earth versus the dinosaurs? It's going to be a very small amount of human bones. I'm just saying. Just think about little things that it could be. I think the Bible allows even for the possibility of a guided evolutionary system that God could have initiated. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know here's what it is. We couldn't have initiated this guided evolution after he created everything. Or why couldn't we? He could have had some sort of guided evolution. I know I'm getting a little off on this, but consider it. What if God created everything? He created humans, like he says in the Bible. And there's some sort of guided evolutionary system after that. Oh, wait, there is. It's called microevolution. You got adaptation. It can happen. Wouldn't that explain the fossil record, the Cambridge explosion? There's all these things that could also happen. There's so many possibilities. So don't throw out your Bible for a science book. The more we learn through science, the more we see God's design. It's true, man. I love seeing these intricacies of science and how people say, well, that disproves God. I'm saying it proves God. Even quantum physics shows that God is behind all of this. But now there's some life-changing implications here. You got science, you got God, and then you've got us. How do we fit in? What the Bible says about creation is what grounds the whole notion of human accountability and responsibility. So if these truths, if this is a truth that God created everything, then we would be asking the question, well, why should I obey God? Some people would say, if he wants to take me in directions that I don't like, who is he to tell me what to do? It's an honest question, right? Surely I'm free to choose other gods, other religions. Maybe I'm allowed to pick and choose from different gods, or I want to do things my way. Could be the way we would take this if God didn't exist, right? Or if God wasn't the authority. Who is he to boss me around? Some people could say, I can define who God is. But unless he made me, if he designed me, then I can't say any of those things. So if God is the creator and he's overall, he's that one that I'm dependent on, I can't make God who I want to be. I have to submit. I have to bow down. I have to honor the God who made me. There's severe implications if God created everything. In this case, I owe him everything. I owe him my life. I owe him my breath. I owe him everything that I have. The legs that I have to stand on. And if I don't see it that way, then I'm out of line with my maker. I'm out of line with my creator. So these are the implications, because if there is a creator, and I believe this might be why Richard Dawkins doesn't want that every creator, he would say it's all an illusion, and he's trying to get God out of the equation, then I'm out of line with the one who designed me. If there is a maker and I'm doing my own thing, I'm out of line with what I was designed by God himself to be. If I'm not doing what he wants, or if I'm not seeking after him, I'm fighting against myself, and I'm fighting against the God who made me. There's severe implications if there is a creator. All of human accountability and responsibility for God, it's grounded on that first instance of creation. And so that's why we're going to see the number one thing is to attack God, that God didn't create, and he made us. If I don't recognize this simple truth, then according to the Bible, that blindness is actually a mark of how distant from God we are. So, like, according to what Romans said, it's clear that God is revealed to us. But that distance from God of how we're trying to do our own thing and not seeking him out is actually evidence of how distant we are from him. And so it's for our own good that we recognize it. Not because he's like a bully or he's like, follow me. But because without him, we would not even be here. And we certainly would have to give, we should give, an account to him. We should honor him if he exists. And so these implications are huge. You've got Genesis 1 and 2, where the whole world is perfect, everything is great, it's everything as it should be. And then Genesis 3, everything goes really bad. People rebel against God, they sin against God, they say, we want to be like God, we don't trust God. Adam and Eve, the story in Genesis 3, they lost sight of the truth of God, and they said, we're doing our own thing. And then brokenness and death came in the world, the whole world as we know it now. And it's all because the first two people said, we want to be like God, we want to do our own thing. God, we don't want to trust you as creator. We want to be our own creators. We want to be our own gods. And actually, we're all kind of guilty. We are all guilty of that in some way. And then God sends Jesus. Jesus comes into the world. And here's what we've learned. And I just want to share this out of the Bible and we'll conclude. It says in John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and we learn that's Jesus, the Word. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. See how it kind of sounds like, it sounds like Jesus was there in creation. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness has not overcome it. Now the true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. Talking about Jesus again, he came to his own. His own people didn't receive him. That's the Jewish people. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. He gave them the right to become children of God. So they weren't children of God in the beginning. And then it says, those who were born, not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So there's something supernatural going on, some sort of birth by God, helping people to be his children. Verse 14, this is just to finish it, it says, and the Word, this talks about Jesus right here, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory is the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. And the story, as you read through the book of John, is the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. And you have this story of the God who came. He became a man in the person of Jesus Christ, and he suffered and died so that we could actually be restored to the way everything was in the beginning. Perfect. The way it should be. So right now, we're kind of in this, now it's here, but it's not yet fully here. And so God is starting where the problem originated, to restore things, to make them new. He's starting with the hearts of men. He's taking a bunch of people who want to be like God, want to be like themselves, who want to do their own thing, and he's turning them into followers of God, followers of Jesus. And then it says, in the end, he's going to make all things new. He's going to make this world how it used to be. Actually, he's going to make it better. He's going to make a new heaven and a new earth. So that's kind of the story. You got John, he shows this. God who created, he died for creation. He's changing everything. Last verse says this, for by him all things, not most things, were created. This is in Colossians chapter 1. All things were created. That means brought into existence, right? When things are created, they're brought into existence in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him, by the Son of God and for him. Talking about Jesus here. It wasn't for just us, or it wasn't for a lack of reason. It was for Jesus. It says here, all things were created through him and for him, for God. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. That's big. If those claims are true, the claims of the Bible, then that means there are some implications for our lives that we just need to consider. Genesis 1, it isn't in the Bible so we can have arguments about evolution. It isn't in the Bible so we can know the exact details of how the world was created either. The creation account is in the Bible so we can understand and know God more. Ultimately, so that we can come to believe in Jesus, trust in him for rescue, because that's what this book is all about, rescue, redemption. Rescue from this broken world. And actually, the hope is that we would worship him. The Bible talks about that. As he rescues us, the creator that gave his life for us, we would worship him. And that's why it's worth considering these claims. The claim that the Bible makes it right in the beginning. In the beginning, God created. So that's my take on it. I say you can share those things. Took notes, if you just remember some things, you could share that to lead someone to consider that God created. Then